right. Hello, everyone. Happy Tuesday, June 13th. So here we are in late spring, almost summer, and it's feeling like summer here in Pueblo. I assume it is probably in most places. So, you know, we're to the point now where we have to walk the dog by the water every day because it's too hot to walk the dog around the neighborhood. So that's lots of fun. But welcome to Gentle Healing. I don't have any announcements that I'm aware of this evening. So I think that what we will do is just begin by playing our song. The song that we're going to play tonight is probably one that most of you, if not all of you, are familiar with, but it's a really, really good song. This is a song that Eckhart Tolle often plays at his gatherings. He loves this song as well. Also, I've seen it played at Muji gatherings. The song is called Who You Really Are, and it's by Kirtana. So here we go.
To this life we call mine, then journey through space.
that song. I love when she reminds us that this lifetime is short and asks us, what are we going to focus on in this lifetime? I think that's a very important line. We are here now. We're in week 23. For those of you who are not keeping track, this is our 23rd week of gentle healing, which means what? 3 more weeks and we're halfway through the first year, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So, but not halfway through the course, because we're moving through a little slower, but we'll be halfway through our first year of gentle healing. And as you guys know, we are, oh, that's good, Lynn. Lynn is saying, and she hasn't missed any yet. So that's pretty good. Congratulations. I've missed some. So we're going to begin, as we always begin, by letting you all share from your experience of the homework over the last week, or just your, you know, experience with gentle healing in general. That doesn't specifically have to be about the homework. Over the last week, we've gone through the review lessons 141 to 147. We also read NTI 1 Timothy chapters 1 through 6, and you practiced the 30-minute self-inquiry meditation with me, which is kind of funny. The first time I practiced the self-inquiry meditation, I was in a noisy airport, and I put in the earbuds, and I closed my eyes, and I practiced the meditation. But I heard different words than were actually on the meditation. And I thought, it's strange that I would have said that, but I went on with it anyway. And then later I listened to it again in a quieter environment and realized, oh, I didn't say that at all. It was kind of funny. So who would like to share about your experience this week? All right, George, the mic is yours.
Okay. Having a little problem getting the mic locked down. I thought I would jump in there because I noticed most people kind of hesitate. And so I really enjoyed the meditation this week with the Tibetan bells and what have you. As a matter of fact, I did it every day and sometimes more than once. I have stepped up the amount of time I'm meditating in a day, which I caught the Michael Langford group last week, and although there weren't many people present, they did talk about meditation, and several of those guys shared that they were meditating 2 hours or more every day. And since Regina has said that she meditates 2 hours or more, I stepped mine up. Now, I haven't had extended periods. For example, I haven't meditated an hour, but I have done 30-minute meditations or 45-minute meditations, maybe once in the morning and once in the evening or something. So I know that's probably not quite as effective, but my goal is to step up the amount of time that I spend in meditation this week. So, for those of you who haven't joined Regina on Sunday night in the week-long satsang or the month-long satsang, I would highly recommend that. So I really enjoyed that also. So, all right, I'm going to release the mic. Thank you.
Thank you very much, George. And yeah, George is talking about the mini series I'm doing on Sunday nights right now by going through the Elie Ruzdar audio and then sharing based on my understanding of the audio this year.
Translating.
By the way, I noticed Irene's comment. She says that she loved the definitions of peace, love, joy, and oneness from the first tip, that it really helped her to feel it. So thank you, Irene, for sharing that. And Kathy, the mic is yours.
I'm glad you guys just commented on interpreting Elie Ruzdar, because I'm struggling to definitely understand her in the audio. I catch, you know, some of it, but not all of it. And so I would be, you know, that's how it felt even when I listened myself to that same audio, like, I don't know, at least a year ago. Maybe it's even 2 years now. You know, when you started off by saying this idea of time, how important it is to look at the passing of time and how quickly it actually does, in fact, seem to go. That has also been on something that I have noticed, like, in an incredible way. The truth of that, how little time there really is to engage as much as possible in the pursuit of finding the truth of myself in this lifetime. And I just noticed, I mean, it's hard for me to believe that it's mid-June. You know, I keep finding myself saying, you know, where does the time go? Where do the days go? It goes by very, very quickly. And I think that's kind of the insistence of Elie Ruzdar, the insistence of a Michael Langford, just in the sense of encouragement in a very strong or what might be perceived as, I don't know, a forceful way, or maybe not the gentle approach where we want to be babied into discovering the truth of who we are. It's like sometimes, at least for myself, I feel like I do need that kick in the butt. And so I appreciate those teachers that kind of give you a heads up, like, you know, if you don't catch it in this time frame, don't worry, there will be another opportunity. And so it's like, how much do you really want this? And how much do you want to maybe repeat these same lessons over and over and over for, I don't know, as many lifetimes as there seemingly can be. So for me, I'm glad for Regina, you interpreting what she's saying. Otherwise, I would be kind of lost, and I don't really feel like spending a lot of time, you know, so concentrating on what somebody's trying to say because I can't understand it that it feels frustrating. So I just kind of take in what I can, and I really do appreciate you commenting on it. And it felt like this particular last time you did it in shorter spurts, which I appreciated even more, because when even if what she's saying, you know, it is one complete thought, but it goes on for a while, I miss a lot of it. So unless it's relayed in like short spurts about, okay, so this is what she said, and this is what she said, and this is what she said, I would be kind of lost. So thank you for that. And I think that's about it. I'll let go of the mic. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. In the first week, you know, when I went with the longer durations, that was because I did not yet realize that you all couldn't really understand the audio portion. So once I got that feedback, again, the people that talked to me said it's worth doing even though we can't hear the audio. So I decided to move forward and do it, but do it in those shorter spurts. So I wish there was a way that I could make it so that you all could hear the audio clearly, but, you know, but how would I stop it?
You wouldn't.
Yes, yes.
No, I would.
Oh, so I'd have to come over here and teach.
No, if you do the audio after you've done it.
Yes.
Then I can chop out her piece and splice in the more quality.
Okay, I'll talk to Ken about that and see if we can get that figured out then, because it would be nice if you could hear the audio, but I'm glad that you all are finding it useful anyway. Oh, bless you, Mom. Jeez. Francine's here and she sneezed, and Danielle, her daughter, is saying, bless you, Mom. That's funny. All right. Oh, and one other comment I forgot to make that I wanted to make on what George was saying. George was saying that I meditate over 2 hours a day. That's not 100% true, so I just wanted to correct that. I meditate between 1 and 2.5 hours a day right now, depending on the day and depending on what I have to do. In fact, what I do is I get up in the morning, get my coffee, and immediately go to the course. And I start by contemplating my course lesson for the day, which is now a day ahead of you guys, and writing the tip. And I can finish that depending on, you know, the course lesson of the day. I can finish that anywhere between 6:30 or 7:30, typically, and get that posted and be done. When I get that posted and I'm done, you know, I might take 5 minutes or so to get a drink of water, go to the bathroom, that kind of thing. But that's when I go to meditation. So that means some days I'm starting meditation closer to 6:30. Some days I'm starting meditation closer to 7:30. So obviously that's going to make a difference on how long I meditate. And then it also depends on what I have going that day. Like today I had an MPP class. So I needed to stop in time to, you know, go and teach my class. So today, for example, I meditated for an hour and 20 minutes. That's how much time I had. So whatever that space of time is that I have between when I finish the tip and whatever my first appointment is for the day, that's how long I'm meditating right now. And I guess that's all I have to say about that. I think I meditate pretty much a minimum of an hour on most days, however. Occasionally, like on Sunday mornings, believe it or not, because we start church here so early, on Sunday mornings sometimes I only get half an hour because church is pretty early for us. We start at 8:15 in the morning, and I still do a tip. Right. So there's not as much time on Sundays. So sometimes Sundays is only half an hour and then I go to church. All right. Anybody else want to share? Okay. Tony, the mic is yours.
Hi, everyone. I have a comment and I have a question. The comment is, I know it's not related to our homework, but it's been brought up about the Elie Ruzdahr audios that you have been doing on Sundays. And I have noticed that the more I listen, the more inspiration that I feel. And I feel like this is helping me to increase my desire for truth. And it's making me feel very, very happy. So I just wanted to let you know that because of the interpretation or your interpretation of what she's saying, it's so clear to me what the message. I'm not saying I'm doing all that stuff, but it is inspirational to me, and it does feel like I'm taking that in as a way to increase my desire. So thank you for that. And then the question that I have is about... it's in NTI under NTI 1 Timothy chapter 3 at the very bottom paragraph. All that you are is beyond the observer, but the observer is a step in the right direction. And maybe it's the way I'm understanding observer, but to me I thought observer is the witnesser, and that is the awareness of what we are. So maybe, and this is saying that all that you are is beyond that. So I just was wondering if you could clarify the definition then for observer for me. Thank you.
Yeah, and in fact, I think some of the reading that I brought that I'm going to share with you tonight is going to touch on this even more. But... the observer or the witness that we are watching when we go into awareness, watching awareness. Boy, I'm trying to figure out the best way to say this. That consciousness has like a back door to it. And as we watch that consciousness, awakening is falling through that back door, where we go from what seems to be a human or a limited awareness or my awareness into infinite awareness. So what the teaching is to, you know, focus on awareness, but that awareness that we're focusing on, it leads to something grander, something bigger. And that something grander, that something bigger, it's the same thing, but infinite. That's true awakening. And so that's what this is telling us. You know, we focus on the observer that we are aware of now. But, you know, if we were to say, oh, you know, that's that, well, then we'd all be walking around, I'm awake, you know, I'm aware of awareness. And there's an infinite awareness that's beyond that. You know, it's kind of like falling through a back door. And in fact, I'm going to be reading a little bit about that tonight when we get to Michael Langford. So that's what this is saying. Yeah. And I see George is asking, being is beyond the observer. I don't know if the word being is appropriate there. Many people would say the word being is not there. I think the word that Kathy used is probably very appropriate right above you on the board. The absolute is beyond the observer. I think that's probably the better answer. And again, when I do the reading, when we get to the part where I'm doing the reading tonight, I'm going to be reading to you from The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss, and I'll talk about it more as I get into that because he touches on that. Does anyone else want to share? Okay, Lynn, the mic is yours.
I just wanted to share, I know that I think it was last week or the week before where we were, it was more like, oh, will I ever get this? So what I decided to do was to turn it around and start making a list of all the times where I did feel that grace pouring in and all those insights that I did receive. And it's been really helpful because it's taking away that I'll never get it into being more positive and seeing how I'm aware of so much more. The gratitude list, yes. But even more than the gratitude list, you know, like just remembering, you know, the years back where I had all these insights that were coming. So that was really helpful. And now that I said that I've been here, I'm thinking about how I'm going to manage my 2 weeks vacation because I'm actually going to Italy.
Oh.
So I'm hoping that I'm going to be able to keep up. So we'll see. I enjoy these classes. So
wasn't
thank you
calling
so much,
you.
Regina, and everyone else for sharing. All right. It's all yours.
Yeah, well, I find myself, Lynn, that vacation is one of the challenging times, especially, you know, staying in a motel room with the family and all of that. I can't get up and do the awareness, watching awareness meditation so well. I'll just say do the best that you can while you're in Italy and have a great time. We'll leave it at that. As far as your comment about reviewing the grace that you have been aware of, I used to, as you know, really keep journals where I just, you know, I think I've mentioned to you, I used to journal typically twice a day. And if I wasn't working on some days, I would journal several times a day. I would be going to my journal all the time. And, you know, not only did I look at my mind in my journal, but I also wrote down, all of my realizations, all of my clarity, all of my, mystical experiences. And what would happen is that when doubt would really come in, because sometimes doubt, you know, just got really strong in me. And when doubt would get really strong, I would sit down and read my own journal and remind myself of this path that I've traveled so far and the grace that has happened, and remind myself, this happened to me. You know, I'm not reading about what happened to someone else. This happened to me. And that would help me to overcome that doubt. So I did something similar. And Ken, I think you had your hand up. Did you want to share?
Yeah. The other morning, one of my duties as sanctuary director is to create the announcements that the admins do every week. And in waking up Sunday morning, I realized I hadn't sent it out.
I noticed you sent them out late. I didn't know why. Okay.
Well, I was waiting for one last announcement on the satsang coming up. And Jacqueline got it to me, but because it wasn't there on Thursday night, and my routine is
right.
Thursday, that it got there on Friday. I forgot about it on Saturday. Sunday morning, I wake up, and that hit. Well, at that point, it's all the guilt and all of the ego talk coming in of you're a failure, you're a screw up, you've really let AT down with this. As it's like the ego is just rushing in to really just jump dogpile on with all the different things. And at that moment, in that feeling of that guilt, it was step back. look at that conversation. And in stepping back from it and watching the conversation rather than being the conversation, it stopped. It totally went away. I got up. I came out here, finished the announcements, sent them off, realizing that I had the announcements. Cheryl didn't come on until Kathy Smith's time, like 1 o'clock her time, so there was plenty of time to get it to her.
Nothing lost, even.
Nothing was lost, but that immediate drop into the pit of, I screwed up. And it was very helpful to have that tool of just step back and look at the melee going on. And as soon as I stepped out of it, it stopped. Because it's like the ego voice, when I wasn't there participating, it had no one to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not there for it to talk to, it kind of gets bored and stops. So that was a wonderful thing on Sunday. And then in reading, I think it is chapter 4 in our NTI reading, is the loving all method. It's about loving everything about yourself.
Mm-hmm. I noticed that too.
And it could have been a very good companion to Michael's, but when I read it, I'm just going, yes. Confirmation that you and Michael, I don't know if you didn't even know Michael at that point.
No.
But here you are writing the synopsis of the whole method. And being that my program is reading from this book that you're going to read from today, the Loving All Method has become one of my greatest tools. A book that I didn't want to read. But I've learned that when Regina makes a suggestion to me of what to do and Ken says, absolutely not, don't want to do it, that it's what I need to do. And I think you even said that. What is it that Regina doesn't want to do?
Yes.
That's what you need to do.
Well, and Michael Singer commented on that too in the interview we heard a few weeks ago, you know, that, you know, like the ego wanted to go kick that guy wandering off around his land, go kick him off.
Right.
Instead, he invites him into dinner.
Yeah.
Right? He does the opposite of what the ego wants to do.
Yeah. So it's, there's so many things that you have asked me to do or asked if I wanted to do that Ken definitely did not want to do. But they've been the greatest things to do. So it's, I can say if Regina asks you to do something, it's for a reason, especially if your ego is going, no, 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 to really look at it. That's it.
All right. Thank you. We still have more time. So is there someone else who would like to share?
One note that's administrative here. Jacqueline wrote me and said that the link to the self-inquiry audio wasn't working. And I checked, and it's all of the old Dropbox links were not working today. I don't know if it's
today.
Yeah, when I was checking.
Okay, so I listened to it twice.
I have too.
Okay.
Yeah, earlier in the week, but today I went in and checked. That one came up as an error. The previous meditation came up as an error. So
well, that explains
the link.
Well, yeah, that's Dropbox because, as you guys know that are trustees, I sent out pictures to you last night, which was a Dropbox folder, and Jay wrote to me today and told me that it wasn't working. So apparently Dropbox is down today.
Right. So I went in and updated it with the Drive HQ link.
Okay.
Since we've mirrored the two
okay,
sites.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And it worked fine then.
Good. Good. Okay. Thank you for doing that. All right, so he's updated it, Cheryl. So if you want to play it tonight here, you'll be able to. But maybe that maybe you're talking about in the past you were going to and couldn't. Yeah, I couldn't get into Yahoo Mail on my computer all day today. I could on my phone, but not my computer. Isn't that interesting? So that's why you got some emails from me from my Gmail account today.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because I couldn't get into Yahoo Mail on my computer today. So something's going on out there. Maybe it's the 13 thing, you know, the yes. 13th. would someone else like to share? Okay, I'm opening up my Kindle. I brought my NTI, but I just remembered that I read 1 Timothy and highlighted, you know, the things I wanted to share about on my Kindle because I was on the plane when I did it, and I don't travel with these kinds of books anymore. Everything is on my Kindle library, so I'm switching over to that right now. And what I'll do is begin sharing. Here we go. So I'm going to begin sharing then from NTI 1 Timothy. It's interesting because, as you guys know, I'm the one who wrote down NTI. But when I read NTI 1 Timothy this week, I was really surprised at how much is in just those short 6 chapters. It's really pretty incredible. And in fact, I read it twice. I didn't feel reading it once was enough, even though I've read it many, many, many times before. I felt to read it twice. So that's what I did. So I have quite a few comments as we go through NTI 1 Timothy. And I can't tell you the page numbers I'm on because I'm on the Kindle, and it is a little different, I think. Well, let me see if it's a little different. See if they numbered the pages the same, but I doubt it. Because it's pretty close. No, maybe it's the same. This says 373, so maybe it's the same. So let's see how this works. So starting on page 373 in NTI. Yeah, verses 3-7. You know, it's really just the second paragraph. It says, "The personhood of man, which is based on the belief in the world, is meaningless." It is, the speaker making funny noises. "It is meaningless." Oh, am I too close to it? Is that it? My phone is too close to the speaker, so it's making funny noises. Okay. "The personhood of man, which is based on the belief in the world, is meaningless. It is meaningless because the world itself is not real. So all that is based on the world is also not real." And then the very next paragraph says, "This is a very deep thought that you do well to sit back and soak in fully. For within this thought is another symbol that is key to your own salvation." And it's kind of interesting because NTI is usually pretty straightforward. And in this case, NTI is not straightforward at all. And usually when I was writing NTI, I knew exactly what it was talking about. And I always tell people, you know, if anybody has the proper interpretation of NTI, it's me because I'm the scribe and I really receive the meaning. But even when I wrote this, I didn't know what this meant. I feel that it was probably something that was beyond me, that I just wasn't at all ready for, and maybe even the kind of thing where I would have just quit writing. So it just kind of pointed to it and it left it there. So one of the things I did on the airplane while I was reading NTI 1 Timothy chapter 1 is I contemplated this. You know, the personhood of man, which is based on the belief in the world, is meaningless. It is meaningless because the world itself is not real. So all that is based on the world is also not real. And as I sat back and contemplated it, the words that kept jumping out at me were simply the not real. And so I really began to contemplate not real. And as I contemplated not real, what I saw is, you know, it can be quite popular in our spirituality, A Course in Miracles and non-duality. It can be quite popular sometimes to talk about how the world is not real, the personality is not real, the mind is not real, the ego is not real. But we don't actually soak that in very deeply, I don't think, in most cases. And I think this is what it's asking us to set back and soak in fully. Set back and soak in fully that I, as I perceive myself, right, I am not real. And if you set back and you begin to soak that in a very genuine and very deep way, the only thing I found that comes up next when you really soak in, I am not real, is what am I? Right? If I, you know, as I perceive myself, am not real, well then what am I? Or another question might be, then what is real? Or what is truth? And I,
you remember at the last, that's our first retreat here in Colorado Springs, I was saying, I don't like the course because it keeps saying this is not real.
Yes.
I'm going, wars are real. People die.
Yes.
That's real. And then you said, it's not truth. Ah, okay.
Not truth. Yes.
That made sense then.
Yes. So what I really feel that NTI was pointing to then that I was not ready for, and in fact, there's another place in NTI where it tried to go into this as well, and I did basically walk away from it. I stopped listening to the scribing and started writing what I call course chatter, because I was comfortable with the course chatter and I wasn't comfortable with where NTI was trying to take me. And that is into self-inquiry. That is into genuine self-inquiry. What am I? And searching for that reality that I am, for that truth that I am. So when this says, this is a very deep thought that you do well to sit back and soak in fully, for within this thought is another symbol that is key to your own salvation. I think that other symbol is the question, what am I? That's the other symbol that is key to our own salvation. And in fact, you can see how well that fits with all of 1 Timothy, because all of 1 Timothy is about us not being the personhood, right? So if we aren't the personhood, what am I? So here we have, long before I even heard the term self-inquiry, years before I ever heard the term self-inquiry, here we have NTI telling us that is key to our own salvation. The next thing is down in the very next paragraph. It says, individual personhood is based on a belief in separateness. And then I'm just going to skip a few sentences. Yet I have been teaching that separateness is false and nothing in the world is as it appears to be. Since this is true, the individual person that you think you are must not be your truth. And again, this is something that I feel, you know, people in the Course community and the non-duality community can talk about a lot. But how often do we sit down and really deeply contemplate it and really soak it in? You know, we might talk about how everything is one or everything is God or there's no such thing as separation. But when it comes right down to it, in our living, in our day-to-day living, we live separation, do we not? You know, for example, and I know this isn't true for everyone, but it's just quite popular in the world today. I've brought it up many times as my example is Trump bashing. You know, when people are Trump bashing, when they're talking about President Trump and, you know, his policies and whatever they say about him, isn't that a definite sense of he's not me? Right? A definite sense of he's not me. And if you happen to be a Republican, many Republicans right now are engaging in Democrat bashing. So when you are bashing the Democrats, isn't there a definite feeling of, they aren't me? Right? They aren't me. So I think one thing that's really important to look at, because self-honesty is always important, is that even though we can say things like, there is no separation, there's only one, the truth is that most of us, if not all of us, still live from a very definite perspective of separation. And the dogs agree with me. And if we can't begin with self-honesty, then we aren't beginning at all. So, what this is telling us then is that our way of thinking, our way of believing is absolutely false. And that's what we want to do. We want to start with admitting that is our way of thinking, admitting that is our way of believing, and then give willingness to see that we're wrong. And we want to do this in a very genuine way. So verses 8 to 11 continue, still on page 373. Individual personhood is like a measuring stick with many points of measurement along its shaft. It allows for differences and differences within differences, so that it is fully supportive of the judgment that maintains illusion. So what's now happening is that the Holy Spirit is showing us exactly how personhood works to keep us believing in separation. And again, it goes back to judgment. And I don't know if you guys remember, but in like the first week or the second week of Gentle Healing, you read NTI Luke chapter 16 and chapter 17. And what NTI Luke chapter 16 and chapter 17 taught you is that judgment is exactly what holds up the belief in separation. And so this is showing that our belief that we are a person is like walking around with an internal measuring stick. And we look at all of the other people and we compare. And of course, sometimes they're better than us, sometimes we're better than them, sometimes that one is better than that one, or you know, that one is better than another. But there's a constant comparison that's going on. And as you know, this comparison can even get quite shallow. It can get down to, you know, how a lady does her fingernails, how much weight a person carries around the waistline, what color their hair is, how many tattoos they have, right? We don't know the person at all. And we're into the measuring stick and we're judging. But if you stop and contemplate that for a little bit, just pause and look at it, you can see how every time you engage that type of judgment, what's really happening underneath the judgment is kind of a reinforcement of separation. That's him, not me. That's her, not me. I'm different from that one. And one thing that I think is really interesting about this paragraph is it says it allows for differences and then differences within differences. So let's take race for an example. You know, we have white people, we have black people, we have Latina people, we have Asian people, we have Arab people, and, you know, other kinds of people, Indian people, you know, we can go on and on and on. But each of these groups of people appear different, right? In some way, culturally different, primarily, I think, in some cases, but, you know, they appear different. Even physically, they have differences. And so I can separate myself from, let's say, black people. I can be a white person, a separatist, we even call them, right? That's the word we use, a separatist. I can be a white person who separates myself from black people in my mind and is constantly doing comparisons about how I'm better than them. And how the white group as a whole is better than them. Isn't that what separatists usually do? Whites are better than superior. Blacks, right? Superior. But what this is saying is, but even when I get within my own group, whites, I'm still going to be comparing. It doesn't stop there. It allows for differences, but then it allows for differences within the differences. So I don't just stop at this big generalization. I get within my own group, the ones that I've already decided are superior to another group, and the judgment starts all over again, right? Within the white people, now there are people who are better than, and people who are less than, and people who are moral, and people who are immoral. So, and, you know, I can even take that and get into my own family, my own family unit. And the judgment continues, right? It just doesn't stop. There are some people in my family that I think are better than other people in my family, or more loving than other people in my family, or whatever my judgments are. So one thing we want to pay attention to is that whenever the mind judges like this, whenever the mind judges against a group or against another person or against myself, right? Notice that what is absolutely happening in that moment is the belief in separation. Just start noticing that. What's really happening now is the belief of separation. Because what the ego wants to do is distract you from that, right? The ego, you know, like if I am a white separatist, for example, you know, the ego wants me to focus on this other race that I think is not as good as me, and it wants me to be very, very focused on just that philosophical way of thinking. I don't know if that's the right word for it, but that philosophical way of thinking. And it does not want me to notice the belief in separation hidden underneath, which is kind of funny, even though I'm called a separatist. It doesn't want me to see that. So what we want to start noticing is how every time we judge someone or judge ourselves in comparison to someone, we're separating. There's me and him. There's me and her every time, right? And just start kind of saying to yourself, I'm reinforcing separation again, you know, without judging yourself, but you want to get very aware of it. Ah, there I go, reinforcing separation again. Ah, there I go, reinforcing separation again. Because every one of us already has the awareness that we want to realize oneness. And every one of us is smart enough to know that we can't constantly reinforce separation and realize oneness. So you want to know the mind's tricks. You want to be aware of the mind's tricks. And you want to know that every time you judge or compare using this personhood measuring stick, that what's really happening is you're reinforcing separateness, which means you're working against your own heart's desire. And this is actually going to help you to let go of judgment. You're going to start to lose interest in it because you're going to start to see very clearly it's not what you want, right? You're out of harmony with yourself. You're out of harmony with your desire. You're out of harmony with what you want when you engage in judgment. And in fact, NTI says that judgment separates the self from the universe, which allows for comparison, waiting, and judgment. Oh, sorry, not judgment. The concept of personhood. The concept of personhood, the idea that I am a person, separates the self from the universe, which allows for comparison, waiting, and judgment. And then it says, in this process, it separates and rejects, right? So if we go back to me being a white supremacist, that's another word they use, I think. I go back to me being a white supremacist, right? I then reject not only an entire race of people, but I probably reject all of the people that are in my race that I see as, I don't know, coddling that other race, right? You know, in some way, right? you know, so anybody that I see that's in supportive of, thank you very much, Kathy. I do sometimes need help with words. So even any white people that I think are supportive of the black people, right? I'm going to reject them as well. So whenever we judge, we reject in some way. We reject someone or we reject something. And what NTI goes on to explain is, in addition to leading to the belief in separateness as we judge, because of the rejection that's automatically built into judgment, that also leads to the feeling or the belief in lack, which NTI is actually calling loss. So all sense of lack or all sense of loss in our life actually stems from judgment and the rejection that's automatically in there. Because if you think about it, whenever we judge and reject, we are carving out a part of our truth, a part of our abundance, and denying it. If we're carving out a part of our truth, a part of our abundance, and denying it, it's going to leave us with something missing. And that something missing feels like lack. Now, we may project that feeling of lack onto, I am not good enough. We may project that feeling of lack onto, I do not have enough money. We may project that feeling of lack onto, not enough people love me, right? But the truth is, the feeling of lack is coming from judgment and the separation or rejection that automatically happens whenever you judge. And if you really, again, sit down and contemplate this, you will see that judgment is something you are no longer interested in. It doesn't matter if it is Donald Trump or if it is those Democrats. Judgment is hurting you, right? Judgment is hurting you. And you will find that you would much rather be in acceptance of rather than in judgment of. Because acceptance does not hurt you. Acceptance leaves you at peace. Acceptance leaves you feeling whole. Acceptance leaves you feeling all is well, right? And acceptance eventually leads to you feeling open, just open for whatever is going to happen. But judgment does exactly the opposite. So judgment doesn't serve you, no matter who or what you're judging. And in fact, NTI goes on to say, here is a trustworthy saying that deserves full acceptance. There are no differences. There is only the illusion of differences. And the illusion is accepted into your own heart by your belief in individual and separate personhood. And in fact, let me go on to the next paragraph. It says, existence is all that is, right? So let's say I'm a white supremacist that's beginning to wake up, if that ever happens. I don't know if it could all happen in one lifetime, but maybe you could go all the way from being a white supremacist to waking up in one lifetime. Let's go with that. So let's say I'm a white supremacist that's beginning to wake up, which of course means I'm leaving my white supremacy in the background. I may still have a little things that still get me every now and then, but I'm starting to leave it in the background. And let's say I'm very sincere. Something has happened, blew my heart open. Maybe it was a mystical experience one day, right? Blew my heart open. I'm very sincere. I'm on this new path. One of the things that I'm going to start focusing on then when I happen to be in the presence of a black person whom, you know, used to, I was very judgmental of and very uncomfortable with, and maybe I've never even known a black person personally, right? I've never sat down and talked to one. You know, I've just, you know, made them inhuman in my eyes. One of the things I'm going to start focusing on now is isness. I'm going to start focusing on the existence here in this white body is the same as the existence there in that black body. And this is going to be very, very important for me as I move away from my old way of thinking. And in fact, it doesn't matter what your judgments are or what your prejudices are. This is going to be very, very important. Whether you're a smart person, an intellectual person who judges against what you think are stupid people, whether you are an in-shape person who judges against what you think are fat and lazy people. What other kinds of judgments do we have? Common judgments in the world.
Thrifty.
Thrifty person who judges against what? Extravagant people?
Shopaholics.
Or a Republican who judges against Democrats, or a Democrat who judges against Republicans. You know, we've all had our favorite prejudices. There isn't one of us who hasn't, right?
Humble versus arrogant.
Humble versus arrogant, yeah. Vegetarian, there we go, versus meat eaters. A spiritual person who judges the non-spiritual. Now we're on a roll. We could do this all night. If we had flip charts, we could do this all night long, because this is what personhood does, right? It picks, I'm in this group and I judge against that group, right? So when we start letting go of our individual prejudices and judgments, one thing that's going to be very, very important is focusing on sameness. Because sometimes there are what I'm going to call apparent differences, cultural differences. You know, a person who is raised in New York City, rich, really rich, you know, like the Trumps, right? And they can spend money. They can spend $55,000 on a dress or a jacket. They're going to think one way because that's how they were raised. And then another person who's raised, you know, in downtown Baltimore, where there's a lot of poverty and, you know, a lot of crime and not a whole lot of positive teachings or reinforcements happening there, they're going to think a whole lot differently. And so, you know, if the person, the rich person from New York City and the poor person from downtown Baltimore get together, these differences in the way they think are going to stand out like crazy. And it's impossible to deny these differences. So you can't look at the differences and find the sameness, right? In fact, it doesn't matter whether you're the one that was raised in downtown Baltimore or whether you're the one that was raised in uptown New York. You're going to think that somehow you're better than that other one. That's just the way the ego is. Somehow you're better than that other one, whichever one you are. It doesn't matter. And that's going to stay in you as long as you're looking at the differences. So what you need to learn to do is look at the one sameness, the one true sameness, not the superficial samenesses like, you know, we both like that movie. We both thought that was an important movie, or we both agree on this or that, because wherever you find that you agree, you're also going to find places that you disagree. You have to look at that which is beyond agreement and beyond disagreement, and you have to notice that it's exactly the same. You can take any two individuals on this planet. You can find the two most different individuals that you could find on this planet, and you put them together. You know, let's take a person who is born you know, with a very strong mental handicap, you know, highly autistic, let's say. Someone who is highly autistic and, you know, doesn't even feed themselves, right? Just way too distracted by the autism. And let's take someone else who is an intellectual, you know, and let's put these two together. They seem so incredibly different. One of them can't even feed themselves, right? But what's the same? What's the same? The isness, the life, the awareness. And in order to let go of judgment, you want to start training yourself to focus on the isness, the existence, the life. And in fact, I do this to this day. You know, when I'm like in a place where there's lots of people, let's say I'm walking around an antique car show, because we do that, or I'm in an airport or whatever, I people watch, but I don't people watch in the way I used to. I used to people watch judging everybody, right? Now I people watch and I contemplate the isness. Literally. I contemplate the isness in each one. And this is how you transcend your own personhood. And therefore, this is how you transcend the measuring stick of personhood. So it says, NTI says, I am teaching you this for only one purpose. It's not so that you'll be nicer, kinder people, although that may happen. I'm teaching you this so that you will know thyself. Because you are that isness you are contemplating in everyone else. Right? It's just another way, it's kind of a reverse method, you could say, of focusing on awareness. It's looking out and noticing isness, or looking out and noticing existence. And in fact, what I like to do is not only notice it in people. You know, this happens to be about personhood, so it's talking about noticing it in people, but I like to notice it in animals. And I like to notice it in nature. I even like to notice it in rocks. You know, I sense isness in rocks, right? So focusing on the existence or the isness in all things helps you to awaken to yourself. NTI says, again, I'm teaching you this for only one purpose. Know thyself. But one cannot know itself as itself if it persists in knowing itself as something different. In other words, you can't focus on yourself as a person and know yourself as life. You have to choose which one you're going to start focusing your attention on. And let's see, there's a question here. How would you distinguish between judgment and the discernment necessary to navigate behavior? Yeah. I'm looking for the right words. I know the difference within myself, but I'm looking for the right words here. I'm just going to give an example. This is somebody else asked me this question this weekend in Maryland, and this was the example I gave. So let me give the same example. There was a teacher I knew once who wanted me to drop my own listening within, drop my own inner intuition, disregard my own inner intuition, and follow him. That didn't feel right for me. That didn't feel right for me. So because that didn't feel right for me, I stopped being in association with him. So that's discernment. My mistake, however, was that I followed it with judgment. I saw him for the next few years as the great betrayer, you know. So when I saw him as the great betrayer, I moved beyond discernment into judgment. Does that make it clear? Yes. Okay. So, yeah. So I don't know how else to explain it other than with an example. So I'm glad that was clear. And you can feel it within yourself when you really start looking at it. But yeah, discernment is just showing you what's best for you to do now. And then judgment piles on top of that. All right, so I'm going to move into NTI 1 Timothy chapter 2. So now that it's explained all of this to us in chapter 1, and look how much was just in that first couple of pages. I mean, that's a lot of stuff that we looked at. I was amazed at how much was in 1 Timothy when I read it again. So now we go into 1 Timothy chapter 2, and now that it's explained all of that to us, it says, pray that you may know only truth, and that all blinders and distractions may be lifted, so that the pure light that you are may be all that you see. Right? Pray for that. Oh, and I see that Kathy has a question, but Kathy says nope, so I think we're good. All right, so we'll continue. So pray for that. Pray that you may know only truth. Another way to say that is deeply contemplate your desire for truth. Deeply contemplate how much you want to move beyond your own personal measuring stick, whatever it is, and see only truth. Know only truth in all situations, and with all people. And then it says, rest within the light of all that is, and accept this light as yourself. I can only see that now as pointing towards awareness, watching awareness. What else could that sentence mean? Rest within the light and accept this light as yourself, right? So we contemplate the existence that we see outside, but we also want to take the time to contemplate the isness or the awareness that is ourself. We want to rest within the light and see that we are the light, right? Light is synonymous with awareness. Rest within awareness. See that we are awareness. And you can't really accept yourself as awareness and a person at the same time. Now, most of us are probably in this intermediate stage that Elie Ruzdahl mentioned the other night, where sometimes we see ourselves as awareness, and sometimes we're really seeing ourselves as and operating as a person. You know, we kind of go back and forth right now. But we're not seeing ourselves as a person and awareness at the same time. You can't do that. You're either seeing yourself as a person, thinking as a person, and operating as a person, or you're seeing yourself as awareness and you're being as awareness. And so what this is asking us to do is to spend more time resting in the light, more time resting in awareness, and accept that awareness is what we are. Because as we realize ourselves as awareness more and more and more, we also naturally do not see ourselves as a person as much, because you can't be in both places at once. And as you naturally let go of yourself as a person, you're also naturally going to drop that measuring stick, because that measuring stick comes along with the personhood, right? If we go back to the white supremacist, there's one thing a white supremacist has to have, and that's the identification that I'm a white person. It has to be there. If I don't have the identification that I'm a white person, I can't be a white supremacist, right? It's impossible. So as you let go of, you know, and Jay mentioned a while ago that one of the judgments that's very popular is the spiritual and non-spiritual. I actually have to see myself as a spiritual person in order to judge non-spiritual people and thinking they should be spiritual, right? So as I see myself as awareness, as I drop my personhood identifications, I also drop my personhood judgments. It's going to happen naturally. So you allow this shift in identification, and that takes care of everything else. It goes on to say, after it asks us to rest within the light and accept the light as ourself, it says, the temporal being you seem to be is not the totality of your beingness, and so it cannot be the truth of who you are. It's like a fragment or a thought. It is a speck of color on a tapestry of oneness, and so it is a part, but you are the whole. And it goes on to say, it need not be rejected. It may be embraced and loved, but it should not be seen as the whole. So what this is talking about, you know, because the ego likes to confuse us in every way. So if we start to grasp this idea of personhood and really how detrimental it is, you know, to us and everyone else, what the ego can sometimes do is then start hating the me, trying to reject the me, trying to deny the me. And this is really saying, instead of taking that attitude, which is actually just more judgment, just see the me as temporary and not the whole of what I am. And embrace this apparent me that's here right now. You see how much gentler that is? The me is a temporary character, but it is not what I am. It is, in many places in NTI, it calls it an expression. It's an expression, but it's not the truth. And in fact, NTI, 1 Timothy gets into that as well. It's an expression, but it's not the truth. So we want to make sure that the ego does not cause us to start some kind of self-rejection, because that's still judgment, that's still rejection, that's still the same problem. It's just now it's turned inward instead of being turned outward. We're here to be in acceptance. We're here to be love. And you know, every one of us. Oh, and Nirmala suggests asking if we are more than that person. Yeah, that's really what NTI is saying here, right? NTI says, rest within the acceptance that the temporal being you seem to be is not the totality of your beingness, right? It's not the totality. So it cannot be the truth, or we could say it cannot be the truth of what you are if you see truth as something eternal. So every one of us has idiosyncrasies. Some people may call them weaknesses that we can judge about ourselves. You know, today I was simply driving the car and I made two silly mistakes. One, I took Lynn Johnson out to lunch today and I asked her where she wanted to go and she told me where she wanted to go, and then she's talking while I'm driving and I'm listening to her and paying attention to driving. And I drove to a completely different restaurant. I parked the car, got out, started walking in, and then it hit me. Wait, this isn't where you wanted to go. Once upon a time, I would have judged myself for being stupid, right? How stupid to drive to the wrong restaurant. That's what this is saying. Don't get into rejecting this person. This character is a temporal character, but it is to be loved and it is to be embraced, right? And so I laughed. I said, I have no idea why I drove here, but let's get back in the car and let's go to the right restaurant. Now later I was with Jasmine in the car and I was pulling out of the garage. This is so stupid. I pulled out of the garage and I stopped in the driveway, and like there was this feeling that there's something I'm supposed to do right now, but I couldn't remember what it was. I couldn't remember what I was supposed to do. Jasmine, of course, much younger, much sharper, gives me this annoyed look and pushes the garage door button to close the garage door.
Knows you.
I knew there was something I was supposed to do. But you know, this temporal person that I am, you know, it's getting older and the brain isn't working the way it used to, and stuff like this happens. I embrace it. I love it. This temporal body's not going to be here forever. I need to enjoy it while it is here, no matter what it looks like, right? I don't want to get into self-judgment and self-rejection, no matter what this person of a Regina looks like. You know, and Ken gave a great example, right? Forgetting to send out the announcements. And at first he was tempted to go into that self-judgment and that self-rejection. Fortunately, he was smart enough to then turn around and let that go. But this is something else we want to pay attention to. This is not all that we are, right? But it is an experience. It is an expression that is here now. And in fact, the one that you seem to be is the one that you live with the most, right? I always say it's the only one you get to go to the bathroom and poop with, probably, right? It's the one you live with the most. And so if you were to reject this one, right, that's going to actually cause you more pain and more suffering than any other rejection, anybody else that you reject, because you're rejecting the one that you live with the most. You're rejecting the one that you be with the most. So you really want to learn how to accept and embrace this one no matter what it does. And it's going to do some odd stuff. I guarantee it. You're not going to get to the mind's idea of perfection, right? You're not going to get to the mind's idea of perfection. So just embrace and love this temporal self. But remember, it's not the truth of what you are, right? It's a temporary experience. That takes us into NTI chapter 3. NTI chapter 3 says, the overseer of all things within the world is the one I, with a capital E, that sees all things as they are in truth. And this, of course, is talking about what I now call inner wisdom, but what NTI and A Course in Miracles call the Holy Spirit, right? The overseer of all things within the world is the one eye that sees all things as they are in truth. And then it goes on to say, this one overseer is within you, so that you need not subject yourself to another in order to see. You must only subject yourself unto yourself. Here is what I mean by that. Realize that the thinking mind, which analyzes and separates and makes judgments and rejects, is a mechanical machine that is not you. It is mechanical because it is habit, and it is a machine because it was made. But it is not you, because you are the maker of that which is made, which you made. Behind the mind that you think is you, behind the analyzing and belief and drama and action, there is one who observes the you that is in play. This one can watch the drama and have thoughts about it, even as the drama seems to be in full play. Now, I think we recently watched, a video by Muji. And Muji was talking about this same observer. And Muji said, this observer is not the one who wants a specific outcome. So like, today when I was pulling out of the garage and I couldn't remember what it was I was supposed to do. If there had been a thought in my mind, and there wasn't, but if there had been a thought in my mind, Regina, you stupid idiot. Right? Some people might mistake that for the observer because that is watching what I did. And it has a comment or a thought about it. That is not the observer. That is the mind. Right? And Muji was trying to explain that same thing. That is not the observer. That is the mind. The observer, when NTI says that the observer can have thoughts about it, the observer that it's talking about is back another level. And the kinds of thoughts it would have, for example, let's go through that scenario again. Let's say that I forgot what I was supposed to do. Jasmine points it out to me. And then I say, Regina, you stupid idiot. There's another observer watching all of this that might in some way, in a wordless way, let me know, let this go. Right? Or rest, accept, and trust. Or, you know, something like that. That's the observer that this is talking about right now. And again, those thoughts may even be completely wordless thoughts. In fact, if there are words, what's really happening is the mind is translating a wordless thought into words for you. Because I assure you, all of these thoughts are actually wordless. And in fact, I was telling Tony and Tom this weekend that when I'm in meditation, usually every day I see something. Yeah, you could also call it the right mind, Kathy. Yeah. Every day I see something. Like this weekend, you know, we were on what was supposed to be a silent retreat. And it really wasn't. It had some short periods of silence, but it wasn't a silent retreat. And so there was a lot of visiting going on, a lot of talking to one another. And that was kind of fun because, you know, we're people who don't see each other very often. So just hanging out and talking was a lot of fun. But what I noticed, you know, we did a lot of talking. We were in silence on Saturday morning, but Saturday afternoon and Sunday and Saturday evening, we were, you know, being very social. And what I noticed when I sat down to meditate on Sunday morning is that my mind was much more chattery than it usually is. Much more chattery. And what I did is I wasn't thinking about that. I was just, you know, doing the practice, noticing the chatter, turning my attention back to awareness, noticing the chatter, turning my attention back to awareness. And after some point, I got a little bit settled into awareness, although it took much longer than usual. It took like an hour. But at some point, I got much more settled back in awareness, and I'm sitting there just resting in awareness, and all of a sudden, this realization came that social situations really are not helpful to awakening, right? That's the observer that we're talking about here. That's the observer. That's just a genuine truth. And although people don't like that truth, that's just a genuine truth. Social situations are not helpful to awakening. Right? And this is why most of the masters we know, as you know, were much more the loner types, right? They weren't in these social situations all the time.
That social celebrate separation.
Yeah, social celebrate separation, yeah. So, but that's the observer I'm talking about. And again, A Course in Miracles calls that the Holy Spirit or the right mind. So it's not the one who constantly is having thoughts about you and your behavior. That's still the mind. This one is much more subtle, much more backed up, right? And so that's what this is pointing to. And that is in every one of us. Every single person has that. And every single person hears that in a lifetime. They may deny it most of the time, but every single person hears that. And in fact, one word that's sometimes put on that is simply conscience, right? Although people also misinterpret conscience to mean guilt. Conscience is that, it's that little feeling or that little realization that you shouldn't do what you're about to do, for example, right? It's that, that's the observer. And it's been there with every one of us. So it says that this one who watches the drama and has these thoughts about the drama, which are these right-minded thoughts about the drama, that we know that that one is more at the core of what we are. We know that's more genuinely me than this outer me, right? We know that if we really pay attention to it. It's deeper. It's more at the core of who we are. And it points out that the reason that we can observe ourselves and have these kinds of thoughts, these right-minded realizations, is because that is what we are, and we are not the person. That if we were the person, we wouldn't have this wisdom ever. The wisdom, the more backed up wisdom, means we have to be the more backed up self. But then, as Tony pointed out, it goes on to say, all that you are is beyond the observer, this observer that we're talking about. You're really further back than that. Yeah. You know, if you listen to the story of A Course in Miracles, A Course in Miracles talks about how the Father, now this is actually all just symbols, not truth, but A Course in Miracles talks about how the Father created the Holy Spirit, which means there's something before the Holy Spirit or something back before. I mean, I don't know what words to use because all these words are actually wrong, but you're that. You're even back before that, right? And like I said, I'll get to reading in just a moment from the Eternal Bliss book, and we'll step more. But what it asks us to do at this point is to step back from our personhood enough in order to notice this observer, paying attention to this observer, being aware of the witness, being aware of the intuition, and start stepping into that first as what we are. And as we step into that first as what we are, it's still not the totality of what we are, but it's moving in the right direction. But it's moving in the right direction. That takes us to NTI 1 Timothy chapter 4, which it asks us to love ourself. But in this case, it's talking about the capital S self. We've already talked about loving and embracing the little self, right? Now it's asking us to love the capital S self. What's the difference? This says, to love thyself is to love all things and all circumstances. So I can't love thyself, the capital S self, and dislike Trump or dislike Democrats. Right? In order to love thyself, I have to love everything. And as Ken already pointed out, this is talking about the loving all method that we're all already practicing. Right? Loving all circumstances. And as we know, one thing that's great about the loving all method is that it gives us these different stages. So if something happens that I'm not able to love, I can see if I can accept it. And if so, that's great. I accept it. If I can't accept it, then I emotionally allow it, which is really the same as rest, accept, and trust. So NTI 1 Timothy chapter 4 is asking us to train ourselves in the loving all method. That's what it's asking us to do. And again, this is going to help us to put down that measuring stick of personhood. It's going to help us transcend the idea that I am a person as we practice the loving all method. It also tells us, and again, this is probably to help if you're not able to love a situation. It says to look at your circumstances and remember your purpose. In other words, remember that you want to awaken and that everything that comes to us in this lifetime is to help us with that goal. So, for example, if the IRS audits me and they say I owe them $13,000, and I have to come up with this $13,000, which for me, for Regina Dawn Akers, is a lot of money. So I have to come up with $13,000 and pay the IRS. You know, this isn't the kind of circumstance that most humans love, right? But what NTI is saying is if I can realize that what I want is awakening more than anything else, and this situation has arisen in order to help me awaken, I can use that mindset to be grateful for the situation. So that remembering that what I want is to awaken more than anything else, and this has come to help me learn trust, right, or whatever it is that I feel the situation is for, that attitude will help me to move into the loving all method. That attitude will help me to love the situation. It says to see all things as a message from my true self. All things are here to help me awaken. And if I do this, again, I will love everything and awaken to the truth that everything is one. I'm going to start moving a little faster now just because I'm paying attention to the clock here. And I do want to make sure that I get to the most direct means to eternal bliss. NTI 1 Timothy chapter 5 says to love thyself is to love all, which chapter 4 pointed to, but this takes it a step further. To love thyself is to love all and to accept all as you. And sometimes I think people misunderstand this. And the reason this is misunderstood is because the identification is still with the person. In fact, I remember the very first time I was ever around a bunch of Course in Miracles students, and I had inner guidance to go to this event in silence and not to break silence at all. In fact, the only thing I did all day was I asked somebody where the bathroom was. So I was in silence all day. I wasn't talking to anyone, which means I was very, very observant. And there were some people sitting around eating lunch together in the grass. And one of them said something about, well, you know, you're just in my dream. And the other one's like, no, you're in my dream. They were confused, thinking that the person is the dreamer, right? That's not true. The person is an expression of the dream. The dreamer I guess the only way to really say it is the dreamer is all of us together. All of us together are the mind that projects the dream. And so what NTI 1 Timothy chapter 5 is starting to ask us to do is to look at every single thing in the world and accept it as an expression of the freedom to think with the ego or to think with the Holy Spirit if it's something that you think is right-minded. But to see everything as an expression of the freedom to think or believe in the way that we as a whole choose to think and believe. And the advantage of this is that if you start to see everything in that way, again, you start to let go of the measuring stick. Because a rose is the expression of freedom. But a war is also the expression of freedom. You're focusing on sameness again. So NTI 1 Timothy chapter 5 is asking us to move to this concept of expression. It says, expression says, the world is an illusion. It is the expression of the freedom of the Son of God. Therefore, everything I see and experience is a symbol of that one expression. As the symbol of one expression, it is also one. Therefore, what seems many is one. This is the meaning of the word family. And I guess family was probably in the Bible because it's reinterpreting that word. But again, you want to look at everything and just say that's the expression of freedom. Sure, it's coming from the fact that we all believe our wrong minds. But we have the freedom to believe our wrong minds, and that's an expression of freedom. Or maybe, sure, it's coming from our freedom to listen to the right mind, you know, if that's how you see it. But it's still freedom. So again, by looking at everything as an expression of freedom, you can hear how judgment just dies there. It's an expression of freedom, end of discussion. And this is something that I practiced for a long, long time. And in fact, when John Mark Straub was at the Awakening Together Fall Retreat last year, he talked about this same thing, that this is what his inner guidance showed him. He had a lot of trouble with the word love. Everything is love. And he said, so the way that his inner guidance reinterpreted that for him, and he actually calls his inner guidance Jesus. He says the way Jesus reinterpreted that for him, or actually I think he says Jeshua, but anyway, the way Jesus interpreted that for him was freedom. Love and freedom are synonymous. Everything is freedom. And he was able to start looking at everything, no matter whether it was something his mind would have called good or something his mind would have called bad, and see it as the same because it was an expression of freedom. Right? It's an expression of freedom. So that's what NTI 1 Timothy chapter 5 is asking us to start doing. It says, realize, no matter what you're looking at, it is only an expression of freedom. It is a desire for experience and the expression of that desire, right? It says partiality and favoritism, like liking the rose more than war. Partiality and favoritism are ticks on the measuring stick of personhood. But love is of all things. And then again, if love is difficult for you, like it was for John Mark Stroud, this chapter is allowing us to see freedom. See everything as freedom. And freedom is of all things. It asks you not to judge one expression as better or less than another, because all expressions of freedom are the same. They are all freedom. And that takes us to the last chapter, which is NTI 1 Timothy chapter 6. I love this chapter. I mean, I love all of it, but I remember this one making a big impact on me when I was the scribe. This chapter might be the chapter that I actually embraced and began to live first, even though it's the last chapter. This chapter says, teach what you would learn, which of course is the same thing A Course in Miracles says. It says, in order to teach yourself that you are not a person, you must teach others that their personhood is also false. You do this by not believing their personhood yourself. You look beyond their story to the one you know they must be, and that is what you hold in your mind as you listen to them. So this is really just another way of saying that you contemplate their existence or their isness. But as some of you know, Laurent came to live with me shortly after I finished NTI. In fact, he came to live with me within a few months of me sending it to the publisher, before it was published. And Laurent was very, very different from me. And on the, you know, if you use that measuring stick of personhood, I judged everything about him. Just everything. I was better than him in every way. Interestingly, he was, in his mind, better than me in every way. So that shows how personhood works, right? So what I started to do was I started to realize I knew that I wanted to teach myself that I wasn't a person. I wanted to see myself as the light or see myself as truth. And so I remembered this from 1 Timothy chapter 6, and I realized I could not see Laurent as this, you know, ignorant fool or whatever I thought he was, or lazy dumbass or whatever, and free myself from personhood too. I had to see him as, and in fact, I didn't go all the way to Isness right away because that wasn't something I could do yet. I saw him as willingness. I saw him as willingness for truth, willingness for awakening. And I, no matter what he said, no matter what he was doing, no matter how much annoyance was showing up in me, because some judgment was also still happening, I continued to focus on him as willingness, because that's what I could do at the time. I wasn't ready for focusing on isness yet. So that's what this is asking us to do. It's asking us to look at other people and focus on them as existence, if we can do that, as willingness, as we can do, if we can do that, as the expression of freedom, if we can do that, but do not focus on them as a lazy dumbass. Do not focus on them as a person. And as you begin to focus on them with this, some type of a quality that points towards truth, you are going to begin to free yourself from your belief in your own personhood. It says that when your belief is placed with the false, you experience the false, and the false is reiterated. It says it's like the it's like a false vibration of somethingness within nothingness. It is existence experiencing itself as illusion. This is as you focus on purposehood. But as you begin to focus on one of these qualities of truth, even willingness, right? And in fact, you know, if you're looking at someone who's not on the spiritual path, Laurent was on the spiritual path, so I could see him as willingness. But if you have a spouse or somebody who's not at all, it may be hard for you to even see them as willingness. That may be, feel like a lie. But you could see them as someone who's searching for happiness, because that's usually true of everyone. So you begin to see them as someone that's the seeking of happiness there. Not really as someone who is, just that is the seeking of happiness. You know, I know he's yelling at me right now because I forgot to pay the cable bill and he can't watch the game. But that's really the seeking of happiness happening, right? So you take away the personal qualities and you get a generic quality that points towards truth, and you see that. Something that's genuine, something that's truthful for you, right? And it says, as you do this, you begin to shift your frequency of vibration from the mask or from the false towards the truth, right? And as you shift that frequency, of course, you're going to start to see yourself differently. You're going to start letting go of the personhood and start seeing yourself in the way that you are. It says, through a shift in vibration and a change in awareness, the concept of personhood shall be gently laid down. So pay attention to how you allow yourself to see others, right? Are you seeing them as a person? Because if you are, you're teaching yourself that you're a person too. But if you can see them as the seeking for happiness, as the willingness for truth, as an expression of freedom, as isness, you're beginning to teach yourself your truth. So that's kind of my review of NTI 1 Timothy. Incredible, incredible chapter. Like I said, I read it twice, and just now I, in a way, got to go over it a third time, and I'm really glad I did. There's a lot there, and I'm sure that within a few months it's worthy of looking at again, because, you know, mind likes to forget that stuff, doesn't it? Yeah. So let's move on to the something new. That was something old. Now we'll go to something new. What I'm going to do is I'm going to read from the Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss. I'm reading from the Black cover book. And I am going to be reading, you know, just all straight. I'm not going to be skipping around. So if you happen to have it and you want to read along with me, you can. I'm going to be reading from chapter 14 under the heading Spiritual Practice, which begins at paragraph 84. And I don't have much time left, so let's just see how this goes. Because the true self is eternally perfect, awareness, love, bliss, and eternally free of all suffering, some people think there is no need for spiritual practice. Because the true self is eternally perfect, some people think there is no need for spiritual practice. Such a notion is an ego preservation strategy. The purpose of practice is not to gain the true self. The purpose of practice is to remove the illusion of a body, a world, suffering, etc., so that what remains is only the eternal experience of the true self. In other words, those who have let the ego trick them into thinking there is no need for spiritual practice because the true self is eternally free of suffering, etc., are still having the experience of suffering, a body, a world, etc. Thus, their experience is not consistent with their concept that the true self is eternally free of suffering and perfectly blissful. This is an example of intellectual spirituality. This is an example of people confusing a journey through concepts, ideas, beliefs, and opinions with an authentic spiritual journey. Practice leads to the direct experience of infinite, eternal awareness, love, bliss, or as Kathy called it earlier, the absolute. A journey through spiritual concepts, ideas, beliefs, teachings, and opinions is a journey through illusion. Practice is what is essential. It must not be a spiritual practice that is created by the ego for the purpose of preserving the ego. With awareness watching awareness method, the practice is progress. I just want to read that sentence again. With the awareness watching awareness method, the practice is progress. What this sentence means, and in fact, George tonight was a great example of this. What this sentence means is if you are sitting down and closing your eyes, or if you're practicing the Elie Ruzdar open-eyed method now, that's fine too. But if you are sitting down and practicing awareness, watching awareness, progress is happening. You do not have to be aware of it. If you are not sitting down and practicing awareness, watching awareness, then that same type of progress that would occur, it doesn't mean other types aren't occurring, but that same type of progress that would occur in awareness, watching awareness meditation is not happening because you are not sitting down and closing your eyes, right? So you don't have to look for evidence of progress. You can know that if you are practicing awareness, watching awareness, progress is happening. So with awareness, watching awareness method, the practice is the progress. The habit has been developed of always looking outward towards the seeing. The awareness, watching awareness method reverses this. Every time a thought arises or the tendency to look outward, the attention is taken away from the thought and turn towards the seer. So we're reversing the habit of looking out towards illusion and learning the habit of looking in towards the truth. And the practice of doing that is the progress of reversing the habit. Thus, With the awareness watching awareness method, a new habit is developed and the practice is the progress. Now this gets to what Tony asked earlier. This is paragraph 90. A question might arise. Why does the awareness watching awareness method focus attention on one's ordinary, everyday background of awareness instead of attempting to look for infinite awareness? Here is an example that can answer this question. Imagine that you live in a mansion that has thousands of dark rooms, and you are trying to find the sunlight. If you focus your attention on a beam of sunlight that enters one of the rooms and follow that beam and trace its origin, you can find the source of that light, the sun. However, if you hold the concept of the sun and ignore the beam of sunlight that enters some of the rooms, you could open 1,000 doors in dark rooms and never find the sun. In this example, the sun represents infinite awareness, which is the true self. The beam of sunlight represents your ordinary, everyday consciousness. If people hold some concept of infinite awareness and try to find it, they will never find it. Your own everyday background of awareness is the path to infinite awareness as sunlight is to the sun. So, we close our eyes and we focus on just our everyday human awareness. As we focus on our everyday human awareness and we get better and better at the habit of focusing on our everyday human awareness instead of looking out towards thought and the world, right? This everyday human awareness is just like a sunbeam. It's not the sun itself. But as we do this, we are unknowingly to ourselves, right? The practice is the progress. We are following that sunbeam, that ordinary human awareness, back until at some point, as I mentioned, you fall through a back door that's back there, an open back door, and you awaken to infinite awareness. We can't focus on infinite awareness because we haven't yet awakened to it. If you were asked to focus on infinite awareness, you'd be asked to do something you cannot do. But you can focus on your everyday awareness, just human awareness. And that awareness is the sunbeam that leads to the sun. So Tony, I hope that answers your question. He says, another example, clearly. Okay, good, Tony. I'm glad I figured this would. He says, another example. Imagine a planet where all of the people were born and raised and spent their entire lives in a movie theater. Almost all of them believed the movie they were seeing on the screen was real. Their attention was so fixed on the screen that they never bothered to turn their heads around 180 degrees to see the projector's light. One of them had the courage to turn his head around 180 degrees, and he saw the projector's light. He did not know what it was, but he followed that light until he found the projector. He went back and told the people that what they were seeing on the screen was not real. He told them that to find the projector, they would have to turn their heads around 180 degrees. But due to the long habit of always keeping their attention fixed on the movie screen, fear of the unknown, their belief that the movie was real, and their disbelief in what he was telling them, very few bothered to turn their heads around 180 degrees to see the light from the projector. I love this list of reasons why they didn't do it. Listen to this list of reasons. One is that their attention was fixed on the movie screen. So their attention is just fixed on what's going on out there, or even our thoughts, right? Another reason was fear of the unknown. Another reason was just their belief that the movie was real. And then another reason was their disbelief that what he was telling them was true, right? This disbelief and this awakening. These are four reasons why people wouldn't do it. And I bet we can find these reasons in us if we aren't doing it, right? He said some of those who did follow his instructions turned their heads immediately back to the screen. Like they looked, but then they went right back to the screen. They were used to the illusion and afraid of the truth. Others did not sustain their attempt to find the projector long enough to find it. That's an important line too to me. You know, we have to be willing to do this until awakening happens. After all, it is difficult to find a projector in the dark. One has to pass through a number of doors to find it. Once in a while, someone actually persevered long enough to find the projector. And it's funny because another story that comes to mind when I read this is in the Bible, Jesus told a story about the farmer who threw the seeds. Some fell on the path, some fell among the thorns, and then some fell on good soil, right? So the good soil will be the ones who persevere long enough to find their way all the way to infinite awareness. That would be the good soil. He says, if you are in a dark room, spiritual practice is like opening the drapes or curtains. If a person says the sun is there, therefore there is no need to open the drapes, that person will always live in darkness. So it is with those who say there is no need for spiritual practice. There was a spiritual teacher who for more than 50 years gave talks around the world. He said there is no need for practice. He said any movement of the me center or the ego helps to perpetuate the me center. That might sound logical, however, what are the actual results? I know who he's talking about, and this is true, so listen to this. Towards the end of his life, it was this teacher's view that none of the people who had attended his talks or read his books had succeeded in ending the me center or the ego. Even though he told everyone not to practice, he felt that no one awakened through his advice. And Michael goes on to say, practice is essential. Talking you out of spiritual practice is an ego preservation strategy. There is another way to understand the need for practice. Most of the people of the world are not doing any spiritual practice. They are also not being liberated from this no practice. Thus, it is essential to find a practice that is effective. So I wanted to read that for two reasons. One was the emphasis on the importance of practice, but the other was really especially the mansion story and the theater story. The mansion story explaining why we're practicing awareness, watching awareness. That is the sunbeam that leads to the light. The theater story to explain why we need to persevere long enough to find infinite awareness. Because if we don't, I mean, we can turn around and look for a little while, but if we stop and turn back around and look at the movie again, we're just, you know, we're really just giving up the search. So we want to understand the simplicity of the search, focusing on awareness, and even though nothing may appear to be happening, we want to understand the practice itself is progress, and we want to persevere until we awaken to that infinite awareness. And I'm certain when we awaken to infinite awareness, we will know it, right? I don't think we'll question that. And until then, we keep practicing. So that concludes my sharing for the day. So let me give you all the homework for the upcoming week. Homework assignment A, we're going to do workbook lessons 148 to 152. We will be staying with those last two lessons for 2 days. So that means we'll spend 2 days on lesson 151 and 2 days on lesson 152. We'll also practice daily awareness watching awareness meditation for 15 to 20 minutes each day, and we will continue to practice the Loving All method, both of which have been emphasized, the Loving All method through the First Timothy sharing and the awareness watching awareness through the Michael Langford sharing. The second homework, homework assignment B, we're going to read NTI Acts chapters 19 to 28. That's pages 246 to 60. And when you're reading NTI Acts, every now and then you'll see a little Bible icon before a paragraph. When you see that, it'll be helpful if you read those verses from the Bible along with NTI. It'll help you to get clarity about what NTI is talking about. So pages 246 to 260. And then homework assignment C, you're going to practice another 30-minute meditation with me, just like you did last week. This one is called Recalling Attention. And I'm sure Kim will probably post the link, but you can also find it at awakening-together.org under audios and videos, under the meditation audios, and then this is under the devotional meditation. And again, you just scroll down until you find the one called Recalling Attention. Or get the link from the homework when it's posted, because I'm sure Ken probably is putting the link there. Is that true, Ken?
Yes.
Yes, that's what I figured. That's what he does. And Danielle says, bless you, Mom, again.
Again.
She knows you. She couldn't even see
she
it.
Does.
She knew you'd say again. All right, so that concludes tonight. I hope that this was helpful to you all. I hope that you heard some practices from First Timothy that might help you get over that belief in personhood, something that you're like, yeah, I can do that one. Maybe you even want to read it again if you get time and pick out where you'd like to start practicing to let go of personhood. And then I hope you understand again why we're practicing awareness, watching awareness. I hope that was made clear tonight too, because we're just going to keep doing that. All right, you guys, thank you for coming. I love you all, and maybe I'll see some of you tomorrow for the guiding light. Bye-bye. That is-